from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, we're going to focus on the life issue as we celebrate the 2020 March for Life and a look at what may be under the radar. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. On Friday morning, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins had a chance to sit down with Senator Tom Cotton to get his thoughts on what might be missed because of the impeachment hearings.
Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. It's good to be on with you, and welcome to all of those Americans who came to Washington today for the March for Life. Earlier today, I was able to greet several Arkansans who came up with some donuts and coffee in our office in the Senate before we had to get going on day four of the Adam Schiff show in the United States Senate.
I want to talk about, Senator, you made reference, Senator Cotton, to folks in your office coming up earlier today, coming up for the March for Life. I mean, this is an issue that is you're passionate about. This is an administration that's advancing life. There's many policies kind of really just on hold because the Congress has been preoccupied with this this issue of trying to find a crime that would match the charge that that really was leveled day one of this administration, trying to remove this president from office.
Yeah, and Tony, it's important to remind everyone that they have been doing this since the first day the president was in office. This is at least the third, maybe the fourth time they've tried to impeach Donald Trump. And when this one fails, I wouldn't be surprised if they try to again. Because in the end, no matter what the specific allegations are in any particular article of impeachment, it all gets back to Donald Trump's one unforgivable sin: beating crooked Hillary in 2016 and being poised to beat the Democrats in 2020 yet again.
Yeah, that's the real issue here. But when you look at the policies that are not being advanced and some of the things that are missing, I'm very concerned. And I know you're, as a veteran of the Army, as a part of the Senate, which pays close attention to foreign policy issues, I'm very concerned about what's happening globally that we might be missing. I mean, it's almost as if we're seeing a second Arab Spring, what's happened in Lebanon, what's happened in Iraq, what is unfolding in Iran. I mean, there's some very significant things happening globally.
Indeed, Tony. And in fact, the biggest of all that's happened in the last few weeks was when President Trump authorized the killing of Qasem Soleimani, the terror mastermind of Iran. It's hard to overstate just what a significant victory that is for the United States and for the good guys in the Middle East. Qasem Soleimani had the blood of thousands of Americans on his hand, to include soldiers who served in Iraq at the same time I was there. Not to say hundreds of thousands of people across the Middle East, from Syria to his own people in Iran. And there's no doubt from the intelligence that he was planning a major attack against Americans in the coming weeks or days. So the world is a much better place now that Qasem Soleimani is no longer a part of this world. And I would liken the president's action here to what he did with Ukraine. In the same way that Barack Obama sent the Ukrainians blankets and Donald Trump sent them anti-tank missiles, Barack Obama sent pallets of cash to Qasem Soleimani.
Yeah.
Donald Trump sent him Hellfire missiles.
A very sharp contrast, indeed. When you look at the overall policies of this administration, and not just the policies, but as you've described the way this president works, he's been described as a disruptor. I think that's true on his foreign policy. He's shaking things up. It's as if we're going beyond the era of containment to actually problem solving.
That's for sure, Tony. I think if you move a little bit to the east on the globe, you can see this happening in China. I think one of the the biggest and most lasting legacies of the Trump foreign policy will be reorienting the United States' view towards China. Now, you and I, for a long time, have known how depraved the Chinese Communist Party can be, whether it's the brutal one-child policy that led to forced abortions and forced sterilizations for decades, or literally harvesting the organs of political prisoners, oppressing religious minorities, whether Muslims in the West or Christians in the East. Too many Americans, though, were not awake to that threat. And in part, I have to say, because a lot of politicians in my party just viewed China as a place to send our jobs and factories and get a lot of cheap stuff in return and get rich in the meantime.
Right. Exactly.
Because this is one area where Democrats, especially some of the leaders like Chuck Schumer, have been more alive to the threat. Donald Trump has made sure that Republicans in Washington understand that China is a serious and ongoing threat to our way of life, and I think that's going to last beyond his presidency.
A very, very good point and a great point to end on. Senator Tom Cotton, I want to thank you for joining us, and I'd really like to continue this conversation on foreign policy because I think oftentimes we miss the importance of that, and this is it's an opportune time around the world to reshuffle what's happening. Senator, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony. Always good to be on with you.
You can find out more about our efforts to defend faith, family, and freedom in Washington, D.C. and around the country when you visit tonyperkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more on the life issue right after this.
We all need to be lectured sometimes. Family Research Council's new podcast features selected talks by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast podium takes on tough issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Listen with us to the lecture, then stick around afterward as we break down the content. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Earlier this week, the Trump administration notified California that they were in violation of the Weldon Amendment, which opts religious institutions out of the Obamacare abortion mandate. Joining Tony to talk about it is the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Alex Azar.
Secretary, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. Great to be with you.
Well, earlier today, you were at the here at the Family Research Council for our pro-life con, and you made an announcement, a very important announcement of a new policy and action being taken by the administration. Share
yes.
that with our listeners.
So this morning I announced a historic enforcement action. As your listeners will know, there has long been bipartisan legislation that forbids states and local governments from requiring that health insurance companies or healthcare plans or their sponsors cover abortion services. California has had a law in place that does exactly that. They require every insurance company to cover abortions. And so today, for the first time ever, we issued a notice of violation against the state of California, ordering them to come in compliance on penalty of loss of federal funds with the Weldon Amendment to respect insurance companies and plan sponsors' choice to not cover abortions.
Now, this is an issue that we have been very involved in here at the Family Research Council because we have dozens and dozens of churches that we work with in California through our Watchman Network. In fact, I think we have – it's probably a competition between Texas and California in terms of the number of churches that we're affiliated with. And these churches have been forced by the state of California to fund abortion. Now, I want you to think about that for a moment, that these churches that preach the gospel, the word of God, speak about the sanctity of human life, have been forced by the state of California to fund abortions in their health care. That's blatantly wrong.
Well, you know, one of our complainants was, in fact, a non-denominational church that that raised objection. The other was a group of Catholic sisters who – think of that – Catholic nuns who were being required – are being required by the state of California to pay for and have abortion in their insurance plan for themselves. But it's important to remember the Weldon Amendment is not about conscience or religion or moral objection. You simply may not require it.
Right.
You don't have to state the basis of your reason why you don't want to cover abortion.
Right.
You don't have a threshold. It simply may not be done.
Right.
And yet they have done it. We have sought to get them to remediate. They have refused. And we hope they will bring themselves into compliance now that we have shown that under President Trump's leadership, this law will be enforced.
This is a matter of, number one, respecting states, their right to do things in accordance with federal law, but also respecting, again, conscience, religious freedom, a longstanding principle in our government. And we saw the violations of that left and right in the previous administration. So I know you've been doing a lot of cleanup. One of those has been in the area of adoption services, where you're respecting, again, the religious freedom and religious convictions of adoption agencies.
That's right. And what we've said is we need more kids to get adopted. We need more providers of services to connect kids with potential adoptive parents. Some of the best providers are actually religious-based providers, and we cannot force them out of the system because they do not opt into every aspect of a certain agenda. And so what we have made clear is that where there are services available, secular services for all comers, that it is okay if a provider focuses on working with co-religionists, for instance.
Right, right. You're not excluding anyone. You're including everybody.
That's right. It's actually a policy to bring more in, not to exclude.
Right.
We want to – the number one priority, where our heart is making sure kids can get placed and adopted. We need more people helping, not fewer.
Yeah, absolutely. Mr. Secretary, you made reference to this earlier today when we were at the Pro-Life Con at the Family Research Council, that these policies are happening because of the leadership and the it's coming from the White House giving you the ability to enact these policies.
Absolutely. President Trump is the most pro-life president in the history of the United States. He believes we must protect life from the moment of conception through natural death. The policies that we are implementing could only happen with a president like Donald Trump who has a true sense of courage and boldness to protect life, because these are tough things we're doing. These are not easy.
They are.
The courts fight you. The media fight you. But he's standing up for what he believes is right, and he has empowered us to do that. He has been – I interact with the president almost daily. And he has been uncompromising on these issues.
I want to underscore that, because you know, I've been here 17 years, so I've had the ability to see many different administrations. And whether Republican or Democrat, oftentimes when the media and the critics pounce on something, you know, everybody hits the brakes because they can't stand the criticism. This administration actually hits the gas and keeps on moving despite the criticism, despite the opposition, because it's rooted in principle and conviction.
That's right. There's no focus group. There's no polling done on these issues. We act from principle and the president's belief that life begins at conception and ends with natural death.
Well, let's talk how that's manifested itself in some other ways at the department. One that I know our listeners care about, Planned Parenthood dipping into the federal trough in many different ways, but one of them through what's called Title X funding, that's family planning. Again, you put forth a rule at the direction of the president that says if you're going to participate in family planning dollars, the Title X funds, fine. And if you're going to do abortion, that's your business. But you can't do both if you're going to get the Title X funding under the same roof.
That's right. So we are enforcing the law, which says that Title X family planning funding may not be used in programs in which abortion is a method of family planning. And so we are requiring fiscal and physical separation if a grantee has an abortion-providing entity. You know, what had been happening was you would walk in the door of a building and there'd be a common receptionist, common computer system, common filing, common billing. And if you were going to get Title X family planning, you walked to the left. And if you wanted to get your abortion, you walked to the right. And when you're over on the family planning side, they might encourage you and refer you over to the to their own abortion enterprise on the other side. And we have made clear that that must be completely separate. As a result of these changes enforcing the law, Planned Parenthood nationwide voluntarily decided to exit the Title X program.
That's a lot of federal money, taxpayer money, that will not be going into the pockets of an organization that's been under a cloud of suspicion in terms of, I'll just leave it at that, and how they've conducted business. I learned something in our interview earlier today at ProLifeCon, and that's why I like to do this program, because I learn things when I talk with members of the administration. I found out that we were providing greater protections for mice than we were for unborn babies.
That's absolutely correct. So the president asked me to take a look at the use of human fetal tissue from elective abortion in our research program. So we did a survey of the work that's done. And one of the things that I found really, it astonished me, because whatever one's views are on the subject, it would seem that the use of human fetal tissue from elective abortion requires a seriousness, a dignity of purpose around it. And what we found was, if you're doing federally funded research on a mouse, you have to go through animal protection review boards. You have to demonstrate how your research could absolutely not be conducted if that mouse were not involved. You have to talk about how the mouse is to be protected, et cetera. Human fetal tissue, no such protections whatsoever. So, at the president's direction, we have stopped all human fetal tissue research from elective abortions within our intramural program at NIH. We believe that one can be both pro-life and pro-science, so we're striking that balance. And then with regard to our extramural programs, we will enforce, there are actually some statutory provisions there, we're enforcing that law to the full extent, and any research involving human fetal tissue from elective abortion will have to get passed through an ethics advisory board appointed by the secretary. And we are going to be promulgating regulations to ensure that if such research is funded, it will abide by the highest ethical, moral, procedural boundaries to ensure the appropriate dignity that is used in that process.
Well, Mr. Secretary, I know that I speak on behalf of millions of Americans in not only thanking the president for his courage, but for your courage and boldness as well to uphold these fundamental values, beginning with the sanctity of human life.
Thank you so much, Tony. It could only happen with the president's backing and his leadership.
You can find out more about FRC's Stand for Life when you visit tonyperkins.com. When we come back, we'll be joined by the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo.
China has become one of the most totalitarian states in human history. The Chinese Communist Party restricts religious practice and oppresses religious minorities on a sweeping scale, targeting those of every faith. The Chinese Communist Party's consistent abuses of human rights prove that it cannot be treated just like any other country. The United States must address these violations in their trade and diplomatic dealings with China. For more information about the human rights crisis in China, visit frc.org/China.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. As we focus on the issue of life this weekend, we thought it would be a good idea to take a look at the Trump administration's international pro-life efforts. Joining Tony to talk about it is Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
Secretary, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be with you again. Thank you for having me on this very special day.
It is a special day, and it's a day that even before you were secretary, it's an issue that you personally, as a member of Congress, were committed to. This administration is unparalleled in its promotion of the sanctity of human life, and that is throughout the ranks, from the top of the administration through every department. And many would not think that the Department of State would be involved in pro-life policies, but it's a big issue at the Department of State.
Tony, it certainly is, and your point is well taken. President Trump has made sure to surround himself with leaders who each believe that life begins at conception, and we've worked diligently to protect the unborn in every sphere in which the United States government has a role. As a Secretary of State, we have control of lots of taxpayer money that goes around the world, and we also are on the front lines of freedom, talking to nations around the world about the protection of the unborn, and you spoke about what Secretary Azar and I did at the United Nations, what my team is doing in the field. Whenever we are interacting with our counterparts, we do so in a way that is mindful of the fact that our government has a responsibility to protect these innocent lives. And then the second element of this is, to your point about the resources, we have done our level best to make sure that no taxpayer dollar ever goes to fund an abortion. Abortion isn't a human right. In fact, it takes a human life, and we've made that clear in the way we've allocated contracts, put restrictions on what organizations that receive U.S. taxpayer dollars can do, and we're mindful that continuing these efforts will require vigorous enforcement in the weeks and months and years ahead.
Let me, it's sometimes important to define terms, and our listeners are probably better educated than most when it comes to these terms, but for the sake of those that might be listening, the Mexico City policy is a term we throw around quite frequently. Explain exactly what that does, because you've expanded it to cover about $9 billion worth of federal aid or foreign aid. Explain Mexico City to our listeners.
So this is a historic Reagan-era policy that has been undone by presidents that did not believe in the protection of human life. And when President Trump came in, we put it back in place. It essentially requires any resources that come from the American taxpayer to come along with a certification from the recipient that they would not use those monies in a way that advocated for or resulted in the absence of a protection for the unborn. What we have done to extend that is there's always risk that when you provide resources to one, they will subcontract it or they will flow that money to some other entity and thereby be able to certify that they didn't do it but have enabled someone else to use those American dollars for that purpose. We've put in place programs and certification processes to prevent that from happening.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. But my close observation here in Washington is that the Trump administration, including the Department of State, is working to correct policies that have proliferated in the last several decades that are inconsistent with America's founding values.
Tony, you and I have been engaged in talking about this for a long time, way before I was the Secretary of State, back when I was a congressman from Kansas who invited the young Kansans who were on the March for Life to my office for hot chocolate and hand warmers after their march. We know this. America had this central set of founding principles, these unalienable rights that we were provided, and President Trump is requiring every institution, including this Department of State, to go back to these founding principles, the central ideas that make America so unique and special. And we're today talking about the March for Life, that central idea of life and liberty. And what that meant to our founders and how the United States government has an obligation to protect that and to ensure that resources that the American government has at its hands don't go to those who would undermine those central values.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. My guest, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, talking about the pro-life policies that have come forth from the Department of State under the Trump administration. I want to go, Mr. Secretary, to the letter that you and Secretary Azar, we had Secretary Azar on the program earlier. We were talking more of the domestic policies, but in this July letter that you sent to international partnerships around the world, you not only talked about giving countries, recognizing their sovereignty and allowing them to not be pressured into recognizing abortion or reproductive rights, as it's often called, as a human right, but closely connected to that, you pointed to the family. And some of the things, the policies that are being pushed internationally that undermine the role of parents and divide families.
We asked every nation to use its power, its independent power as a sovereign country, to think about the centrality of family to the success of their nation. Alex and I both believe that deeply. An element of this is to protect the unborn, but another element is the central principles that deliver on the family unit as the central organizing tenet of successful civilizations. And so many organizations, partnerships, international entities have sets of policies that don't reflect that. And what Secretary Azar and I sought to do was to reshape the way countries think about this, to make sure they understood how important it was for them and for their people's success to understand the risks when family is not at the center of how they think about how their countries can prosper and be secure.
When you talk about this, you're essentially saying allow countries to make their own decisions based upon their religious conviction and cultural heritage, and not force them through a form of cultural imperialism with our global policies to adhere to something that is an anathema to them.
Yes, Tony, you nailed it. They have often had international organizations show up on their doorstep and tie resources, funding, support, commitment, all the things that some of these countries who aren't wealthy nations need, tie them to a set of policies that are inconsistent with what their culture and their heritage reflects and their religious beliefs in their particular country would reflect. You know, we've talked about religious freedom. We want to make sure every country has the understanding how central that is to their nation's success and how they shouldn't let a bureaucrat somewhere sitting in an international organization interfere with their country's sovereign desire to allow their citizens to practice practice religious freedom.
When it comes to religious freedom, for instance, it's not an American standard of religious freedom. It's an international standard, going back to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in 1948.
Tony, it's absolutely the case. Now, these aren't any administration's ephemeral, temporal values that they bring to bear. These are the fundamental rights that each human being is granted by our Creator and who are enshrined in international human rights doctrine dating back to that very document you described. It's in our founding. It's in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and what we are seeking to do is to ensure that these international organizations don't interfere of that country's sovereign decision to do that, to execute and protect those very rights.
Yeah, I think that is an extremely important point to make, that this is not the reverse side of cultural imperialism that we saw in the last administration, but it's allowing these countries to operate according to universal standards of freedom, freedom of religion, and their own cultural and religious convictions. Mr. Secretary, I want to thank you for being so generous with your time. We are grateful for what you're doing at as Secretary of State and advancing an understanding of the sanctity of human life literally around the world. So thanks so much for joining us on this special Friday edition of Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Tony. Bless you. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.